So we have to end this drug war, right? It's we really have to end this drug war. What do you know for sure about what we need to do, what the black church needs to do to end this war on drugs? So,
well, what I know for sure is that the conversation we're having is not limited to the Christian church. And I want to lift up the words of Howard Thurman to say what is true in a religion is not true because it's in that religion. It is in that religion because it is, in fact, true. And so what the Proctor Conference and our team has been doing for the last several years is mobilizing an interfaith affirmation that we share common values around compassion and care and the opportunity to push and propel this historic moment to change the paradigm from one of mass incarceration to one of health and compassion in response to the drugs and the drug war or the drug problem, however people choose to define it. And what that means in my mind then is that the black church has to be present and participatory in a movement where the common tenets of compassion and care and help and humanity is lifted up as a response to dismantling this system of oppression. And so when we look around this museum setting we are in, we will see that drugs and the war on drugs has impacted every corner of the world and every social, economic, racial, ethnic, and religious tradition. And so I think it is therefore most important that we become intentional about organizing ourselves with other leaders of different faith traditions in order to dismantle the system and the collateral damage that's being done to families and communities all over the world.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I would add to it. So we need an intergenerational, multiracial, multi-faith movement for societal change. In other words, let's look at this hot mess of a culture and think about how I can point myself at the thing I have the capacity to do and equip you to do the same thing. Find the commonality. These things are interconnected, is what I'm trying to get to. These are poverty is connected to healthcare, is connected to overuse of drugs, is connected to stigmatization, is connected to, right, all of that. So I want to just, that's exactly right. I think the other thing that I would add to it then is something like our theology of critique, like what the world is unmerciful because we're not merciful. It kind of breaks my heart. It's like, you know, I know a kid who came out, a young lady came out gay to her black church when she was a teenager, and they put her out for coming out gay. And she's never sang at a church again until she came to my church and sang 20 years later. The same thing happens about sex. Good God Almighty, does God really... What? You know? So a theology that is ready to have a hermeneutic of such judgment seeps in our culture. So you transgress, and it's in the black church and it's in the white church, and it's heavy. It's in Islam and it's heavy. It's in sects of Judaism and it's heavy. We need to lighten up and think about mercy.
Great. Thank you. So we're going to turn to you for questions. Okay, so we can take two questions for our panelists. Any questions for the panelists?
Thank you, first of all, for such a powerful sharing. I've been taking copious notes. So this question is for anyone that wants to answer. There were a couple of points, one about embodiment, the other about our trajectory of hope. And my question to you is in terms of strategies on the ground, whether you're looking at worship services, religious education, training of leaders in particular, the training of the seminarians. How do you see us going forward in getting these aspects about where hope lies and how we embody it, of returning back to our African spirituality? How do you see that? And you can take any one of those on the ground, whether it's with clergy training, whether it's with the liturgies that we use. But if you would just share some of your insights and wisdoms on how we get it activated in those immediate locations of church worship, practice, education, and training.
Let me just start by saying, I think one of the things we'll have to do is to be real clear about how we work to dispel the myths. One of my friends says sometimes about the world in which we live in, the society that we're part of, it's all made up. There's a way in which there are all these fanciful kinds of images of what success is and what achievement and accomplishment, what prosperity, what purpose, what meaning is. There are people in the church who have too often given us false kinds of understandings on that level. We have to be the people who are about doing the business of re-examining, looking critically at those things. It kind of makes me think about the Gerasene demoniac, the whole issue where it says, you know, what is the name of this demonic force within you? And the response is legion, because it's manifested itself in so many ways. If we look at our community in terms of all the ways in which we're being bombarded by those negative realities, then we realize that what we're trying to counter is something that takes on different phases, that every day is being projected to us and upon us in ways that we find ourselves having to try to work our way through in a way that's not crippling to us on a day-to-day basis. So what I would suggest is that what's most important for us is to make sure that wherever we are in those safe spaces that we create, that a part of what happens in those spaces is a continual critique of the contradictions. I like the way, again, my favorite Howard Thurman quote is that none of life's contradictions are final. We're dealing with a lot of contradictions that are the byproduct of the experience of living in this culture of oppression. But we have to continue to be the ones that understand that that's not final, that that might be a part of what has transpired along the way and where we might seem to be. But there are people every day who continue to create for us these distortions, these lies, and these myths that really are not about the truth. And the truth is bigger than all the facts that people can ever put before us. The fact might be that the analysis that comes from some of those who are doing the assessments of the problem that we're dealing with always seems like we're doomed and there's no way out. But there's a truth that's bigger than all the facts. And that truth is that we are one people who've been created by one God, irrespective of the names that we might call that God by, and the ways in which we might experience the teaching. But we have to come up with the new ways of dealing with that.
And so in all those strategies you mentioned, from liturgy to how you develop ministries, etc., I would say that we need to think beyond worshiping ceremony. Too often we worship ceremony. Yeah. And we have to create space, environment, and strategies that allow individuals to excavate their truths. Because it's in the telling of the truths of the personal narratives, such as how many of you are impacted by this mass incarceration. Please stand. And if the truth be known, most congregations would have most people standing. And rather than feel a sense of shame, we ought to feel a sense of courage and compatibility with one another to organize to dismantle that. And so that powerful just word truth on the back wall there is the beginning point for us, I think, not to worship ceremony, but in fact to begin to embrace the personal narratives, the suffering of the people that we are called to serve.
Wonderful. We have a second question.
I do, but mine's going to be based on the UK, but I'm looking for some direction in this. And so a black male in the UK is 7 times more likely to be stopped and searched than his white counterpart. 2/3 of the stops and searches are drug related, are for drugs, but don't actually reveal drugs. However, throughout the whole criminal justice system, black people, on the whole, fare worse than their white counterparts. So our jails are full of black people, and in actual fact, a shocker for America is that proportionally, we jail more black people in the UK than you do in the USA. So, get your head around that. And that two-thirds of that is apparently drug-related, even though the evidence is very, very clear that black people do neither ingest or sell drugs at any greater rates than their white counterparts. But what I'm coming to with this, so that's the sort of landscape and the background that we're working with in the UK. But what I'm coming to with this is back to the faith, the faith element of this, which is that our churches in the UK, and I'm not talking about a specific denomination here, I'm talking about multi-faith, still take a really punitive approach to drugs. So it's not even part of the narrative. The narrative hasn't really even started within our faith communities. And if I could ask, the question that I would ask is, what advice would you give to me in relation to where do we start that? Because that's what I'm trying to do in the UK.
That's such a great question. Where do we start? I have a playful thing I'm going to say, and please forgive me, but I wish some pastors would confess that they smoke pot, because they do. You go to religious retreats and places where pot's legal, and they're getting down, honey. I wish we would stop pretending like alcohol isn't a drug, because it is, as is Ambien. So my thing is, where are the places we can set a conversation to be real? And it might be that you have to start first with clergy. Because we actually go to seminary and get taught to have a really strong false self. We get taught to pretend like we're good and pretend like we're holy. And that you won't love us if we don't put that facade on. That you won't respect us if we don't put that facade on. And maybe there could be a space where clergy could be together. Maybe you give them a little weed. I don't know. But, let's have them be in a safe space to kind of talk about what's at work. And that's the thing that I would start with, is what's at work is the church is fake about that, right? You know, of course human beings alter their reality with drugs of some kind. Running is a, you know, when you get the endorphins. So let's get real. Maybe a little seminar with people. Maybe they do some real sharing. Maybe they create small groups of talking. Maybe they begin to think together about what's the curriculum for the clergy. We don't get that in seminary, to be honest. We don't get taught to be real in seminary. We don't get taught to the place, the appropriate place of vulnerability, the prophet place of authenticity. So that's one place. I think the other place is between police and clergy. I think the police, so again, my frame is we've all interjected. We've all taken in judgment as the way to deal with people. So if the police and clergy or police and lay leaders can get together and talk about why is there such a strong no about this. So then it really boils down to relationship and community organizing, which I think Ira is always talking about really well. Like, this is dismantling small groups at a time, one-on-one at a time. Those are my two ideas.
Okay, so thank you very much. Please join me in thanking our incredible, fantastic, amazing panelists, the Reverend Ed Sanders, Dr. Ivor Carruthers, and Dr. Jackie Lewis. Thank you.